Prayer then is a gift from God, a gift always given. There's no doubt about the gift. Since the initiative in prayer always comes from God, prayer is always a gift to be welcomed with humble attentiveness. I've chosen those words really carefully. I think, well, they're as good as I can find. It's a matter of being humble, that is, you know what humble is, and attentive. The heart has to be alert in prayer. And we do drift off, we get tired, we fall asleep. That's fine, God can love you while you're asleep. But when you're asleep, you're not actually, that's not prayer. It's, you're just sleeping in God's hands and there's nothing wrong with it. But prayer is about being attentive. So when you lose attention, you bring it back again. In number 2559 of the Catechism, we read, only when we humbly acknowledge that we do not know how to pray as we ought, quote from Romans, are we ready to receive fully the gift of prayer. And now I just refer you to my book on prayer, should it interest you. There's a couple, there's some chapters I won't go into now because I can't in 8 talks give a whole book. But there's a chapter there on an obedient heart. That's one of the titles of the chapter. And obedience means listening. You probably know the word obedience. It comes from audiens, the Latin listening. Audiens, the actual participle, listening. And ob means right up close, like an obstruction or an objection, you know, direct hit. Well, obedience means listening up close. So attentive listening is what obedience means. So an obedient heart is a heart that listens attentively. I've got a chapter on a free heart, which reflects on freedom we need to be truly open to God's, to welcome God's offer of communion. If God is offering me communion, it's another image from Thérèse of Lisieux. She talks about when she goes to heaven, she wants to go with open hands. Because if I'm holding on to something, I can't receive your gift. You're there with a gift, but I can't welcome it until I let something go and open my hands to get it, you know. So there's all that freedom is freedom to fly, and we're caged, and we cage ourselves. And we keep the leash tight on something because we don't want to let it go. The boat is attached to the wharf and we don't want to dare the open sea. Well, you've got to dare the open sea if God calls you. And so there's all that very important religious stuff about detachment and so on. And there's another chapter on a humble heart, which is about making space for God in our heart. Here now, and I'm quoting from the Catechism, number 2560 reads, it's quite lovely really, if you knew the gift of God, the wonder of prayer, this is the Catechism now, all this, is revealed beside the well where we come seeking water. You know that scene, I'm sure, do you? The Samaritan woman coming to the well. Well, that's prayer. You can even imagine prayer like going to the well, to sit there, to be there. See, it's all these little memories. I've got a beautiful memory of my father. I have very few memories, or I've got a lot of bits of memory, but significant memories of my father, because I left home at 12 and he died while I was down in the seminary when I was 18, I think. Just turned 18, 19. So I didn't, you know, in that important part of my life, I was separate from my father. So I don't have too many memories. And he had a short fuse, and he had 8 kids and 6 boys in a row, and mum could handle it, and dad couldn't. It'd be my summary of the situation. And dad had died at 60, poor, never had good health. And so with 6 boys racing around the home, tearing each other to bits, you know, of the greatest love. Probably it was a bit hard for Dad. So Mum used to protect Dad. So when he came home, he'd go into the lounge room on his own and we weren't allowed to go and distract him. Well, I remember once as a little boy, 6 years old, no more, might have been less, with my little Globite bag going up to the school. We had to walk up to Palambi Street, Northbridge, and then right along Sailors Bay Road, and it was safe in those days. And we did it. We didn't have a car, so kids just went where they went. We'd be away for a whole day having fun at what's now Castle Crag, and it's been spoilt. Then it was just bush, paddocks for kites and snakes and cliffs that you fell off and broke your head open with. And so why are we still alive, I don't know, but Mum didn't know half the things we got up to. But we lived a childhood that was interesting, and we survived. The ones that didn't survive are not here to talk. But anyhow, I remember this day at little six, I walked into the lounge room, because we used to have the rosary every night. And then Mum, we'd all kneel down for the rosary. And I loved Dad, because as soon as the fifth decade was finished, Dad would sit up. And I used to look at him, and I still remember as a little kid thinking, when I'm old enough, I'll be able to do that too. But in the meantime, I had to stay kneeling while Mum tripped off a few extra dozen prayers. So I thought Mum was the pious one and Dad was, you know, kind of ordinary and a bloke. And I liked that. Anyhow, this day I walked into the lounge room, going off to school, and truly I can't put it any better. I just walked in, opened the door, rushed in as a little kid would, and stopped. Something stopped me. There was nothing there. The silence stopped me. And I looked over, and there we had a... Oh, God, I'm getting emotional about it. God, that's 70-something. Anyhow, there's a big picture of the Sacred Heart, and my father was kneeling in prayer before the... And I, somehow that wasn't the Dad I knew. That was kind of private or quiet or whatever. And I can remember just stepping back, and I walked all the way up Palambi Street, all the way to the school, in some kind of a trance. Some kind of a... Didn't know where I was. That's amazing, really. But it's probably... And little kids are sensitive. It's probably happening all over the world, but... That's one memory I have of my father, which, of course, I'll never lose, that little moment. And no doubt he did that often, because he needed to do it, wanted to do it. So he's at the well, drawing the energy and the grace to be the father he was, who was not healthy, but gave all of us... he gave all of us something, and that was a sense of justice. If anything unjust was done in the world, we copped it at table, Dad. You know, well, that's a good thing to pick up as a kid, the inability to live within justice. Well, the wonder of prayer is revealed beside the well where we come seeking water. There, Christ comes to meet every human being. You, if you want him to. It's he who first seeks us and asks us for a drink. That's a beautiful part of that scene. Jesus is there at the well and the woman's there. And he doesn't start off by saying, "G'day, I'm Jesus. Well, how can I help you?" He says, "Would you give me something to drink?" Because he's thirsty and she's got the bucket. Well, it's simple, but it's... I've actually noticed that sometimes when I ring up presbyteries. And I don't do it myself, I don't think, because I don't think I can. But you know, someone says, "Oh, someone here, can I help you?" Why does the person at the other end of the phone presume you're wanting their help? Why start like that? And I'm not picking on the person in a pre... I think it could happen anywhere. I've heard it elsewhere too. And it's a habit probably you get into, but it's not a good habit. A person may be ringing you to help you. So you don't start from a position of whatever it is. So Jesus doesn't start there either. He says, "Please, could you give me something to drink?" And he needs your love. My love. Our love. Jesus thirsts. He said it from the cross. "I thirst." It's the thirst of God. His asking arises from the depths of God's desire for us. That's the big thing. Our response is a little thing. It's good. But the big thing is that God wants you. Whether we realize it or not, says the Catechism, prayers are the encounter of God's thirst with our thirst. God thirsts that we may thirst for God. That's beautifully written, Catechism statement. number 2561 of the Catechism, just the introductory little bit, says, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water, still staying with that same scene. Paradoxically, our prayer of petition is a response to the plea of the living God. Quoting Jeremiah, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Building up our own towers of Babel to try to reach heaven. You can't do it. Prayer is the response of faith to the free promise of salvation and also a response of love to the thirst of the only Son of God. And if I may just refer you to it, Yielding to Love, that's the book I wrote on this. Chapter 11 reflects on a believing heart. Basic to prayer is the belief that God wants to be in a communion of love with us and that Jesus thirsts for this even more than we do. Number 2561 reads, it is the heart that prays. If our heart is far from God, the words of prayer are in vain. Now that's, I'll do it as best I can, but that's so important for everyone to learn, because there are people, maybe some of you, I don't have this problem, my problems are elsewhere, but we've all got different temperaments. There are some people who wear themselves out saying prayers. And when they come and talk to me and I talk to them, they're making it impossible for themselves to pray because they're wearing their heart out saying prayers. Do you get what I'm trying to get at? It's too busy with it and feel I've got to do this and I have to say this to St. Jude and I have to do this to someone else and they've got a book and if they're doing it lovingly and it's bursting out of them, go for it. I mean, for heaven's sake, no one's going to tell anyone else how to pray. That's not the point. But if it's burdensome, if it's wearing you down and if it's something you've got to do and you can't not do it and at the end of it you don't know what you've done except that you're up to page 6, you see, do you know what I mean? Really? Because you haven't actually said any of it because your heart wasn't there, but you did it out of duty or something else. Someone needs to put their arm around you and say, darling, stop. And pick you up and take you for a boat ride in the moonlight. I don't know, something to help you just think, let the water lap against the boat for God's sake and stop all this prayer. Am I overstating it? No. Just be gentle with yourselves, because God isn't interested in prayers. He's interested in your heart praying. And if prayers help your heart pray, oh, that's wonderful. And we've all had that experience. And I have favourite prayers too, of course. That I can't say it any better than this other person has said it. So it's now become mine. And what a gift. So you do it. But it's the heart that prays. So don't be hard on your heart. Everyone else just about is. The world is. Your heart has to be nurtured and you have to be very gentle with your own heart. Because it's precious. Your soul, you're precious. It's a precious. It's you. It's divine stuff. And be as gentle with your own heart as you are with the heart of a little child. Because you're only a little child in a slightly bigger body. That's all you are. And you're all looking marvellous, I might say. But that's what we are. And life's short, isn't it? From my vantage point at 71, it seems to me I'm on my last lap. I don't know how long it'll be. But when I think what I was doing 20 years ago, and it seems like yesterday, and then I think, oh, 91, I doubt it, you know? So life's short. We're only children. We're only little in this great cosmos. The Catechism goes on to give a good definition of what's meant by heart in that context in the number 2563. See if you like it. The heart is the dwelling place where I am and where I live. According to the Semitic or biblical expression, the heart is the place to which I withdraw. Maybe not often enough. Or maybe some of you are always in touch with it, and that's beautiful. The heart is our hidden center, beyond the grasp of reason and of others. Don't let them in there, unless you want them in there. And don't let them hurt you there. I say that, and I've been hurt there too often, but anyhow, try not to protect your heart. Because some people will hurt your heart, and you need to protect it. And you might not answer the phone, or you might hang up as gently as you can, or you might just, you might walk away. And you're allowed to do that, aren't you? I mean, a bird is allowed to fly away from the snake as it comes ripping up the bloody thing to get it, or the cat that's about to pounce. You don't have to face everything, because some things are baloney, and they're not worth facing, and they're not truthful, and they're hurtful, so have the courage to be yourself and just say, I don't have to put up with this. Hang up. Some people, that's the only way you can handle it. The only way I've learned to handle it. I don't have to do that very often, and I never used to be able to do it, by the way. And I'd put up with stuff, not personal always, but on the phone, for long, because the person wouldn't take hints to hang up. And then I finally realised, this is hopeless. It's just destroying me. And they're just on a mad thing. So you can advise me later better if you want to. But I did find myself one day saying, I don't have to listen anymore to this. Good night. And I felt pretty good after it, actually. I did. I thought, well, I've learned something. And they've got a problem, they have to work it out. And they're not wanting me to work it out, do you get me? It's not a phone call that's going anywhere. The heart is our hidden centre, beyond the grasp of reason and of others. Only the Spirit of God can fathom the human heart and know it fully. The heart is the place of decision, deeper than our psychic drives. It's the place of truth, where we choose life or death. It's the place of encounter, because as image of God we live in relation. It's the place of covenant. There's one of my favourite icons, and maybe yours as well. It's the icon of the Trinity by a Russian iconographer called Rublev. I think he's early 1500s, I think. And it's the Trinity. It's actually, it's the scene there. It's a reflection on the scene of the Abraham story, which you might know from Genesis 18, when Abraham and Sarah are visited by three divine guests. And that's what the picture is about, the three guests. But, yes, the early 15th century Russian mystic Rublev has it there as a statement of prayer. And let me just point out things that you may have noticed or may not have noticed. That's Jesus in the centre. Well, you know that from the colours. And Jesus is looking at his Father, God the Father. This is how Rublev, as I am, and you know that by the gold. He's looking, always willing to do the will of his Father, never wanting to do anything else except what God asks him to do. So he's looking to the Father. It's hard to pick up there, isn't it? But if you get a picture close, you'll see it. And the Father is looking straight across at the Spirit. The Son, sorry, but the Father is looking at the Spirit. Because the Spirit is God's action in the world, the one that God sends into your heart and into the world to do God's will. And the Spirit is looking down here to the Eucharist table. And you're where you are, the fourth person at the table, invited to share the meal, the Eucharist. So it's a meal, and a rather lovely image of prayer. In Rublev's icon, Jesus is in the centre. He's looking to his Father, who's on his right, ever ready to carry out his Father's will, and always in communion with his Father. The Father is looking towards the Spirit, who's on Jesus' left, and the Spirit, ever ready to carry out the Father's will, is looking at the Eucharistic gifts on the table. The one looking at the icon is invited to join them at prayer. You might find, some people do, in your home, you might like to set up what they call a prayer corner, a little place, if you've got space in your house, a little space where you only go when you're praying. And it might have a little, some cultures do this quite beautifully, they have an altar in their home, you know, with icons and candles, and we had the picture of the Sacred Heart and a few little things like that, and maybe you have something simple too. But a little, just do it for your own taste, and a little Bible or something, and maybe a lamp which you can put on, or you might be gazing out onto the autumn days with the sun coming in, if you've got this kind of leisure and place, and you call it a prayer corner, and you set it up. And when you go there physically, you go there. You might have that icon there, just to remind you of what you're doing. Any help is good, obviously. The Catechism concludes its introduction to Christian prayer in number 2565, and I conclude the first half of today's talk. Prayer is Christian insofar as it is communion with Christ and extends throughout the Church, which is his body. Its dimensions are those of Christ's love. And in Yielding to Love, chapter 4, I've got a chapter on the loving heart, and in chapter 7, on the heart of Jesus and letting Jesus pray in us.